Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to edition 265 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula One. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are back. Yes, we are once again here at the iconic Rushcutters public house on the outskirts of Norwich. Not quite sat by the river today, we are inside, but we're enjoying the gorgeous sunshine and we are bringing this to you on all the usual podcast channels. And we are here to break down the magic and the mayhem of the truly brilliant British and 70th anniversary Grand Prix. Coming up, we are talking tyre troubles, Return of the Hulk, and Lando Norris's Milkman. I am Damon Hill, radical and blogger and part-time host, Richard Baxter. Welcome. And I am joined by two members of the NRF1 royal family. I have the NRF1 podcast co-founder, Perry Hamilton, and 2 times Beccles kart champion, Kyle Cumbers. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I think we need more honorifics. I think if you're going to be part-time host, I think I should also be part-time host, because I think we've both done it. Yeah, and Kyle, isn't Kyle like 2-time Beccles karting champion and the Oracle and multi-time prediction league champion? Kyle Cumbers, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely is. Definitely is.
Steve got more. He's got more titles, isn't he, in the prediction league? Steve, has he got 3? Oh, some of them are dubious. Sorry, Steve.
Oh, what, when he predicted it won't rain in the middle of like Abu Dhabi or something? It's like, all right, good one, Steve.
he went for the low hanging fruit on that one. But you know,
he's a deserved champion.
But royal family is nice, and yourself as well, Rich. You're not in on that, you know, from the early days.
Quite early, not as early as you two though. So.
No, but to begin with, it was just me and Michael and a digital recorder in a broom cupboard at Archon. So that was it.
That's okay. We can go back there again soon. We can do a reunion in the broom cupboard or something. We'll figure it out. But no, you're both doing well. This is obviously kind of end of lockdown now. We're sat in a pub without face masks. Or maybe we aren't. Have a look at Instagram and Twitter and you'll find out. Look out for the plugs later. But yeah, you guys, you good? Both good and been coping well through the full-scale crisis that's been going on around the world?
Yeah, coping quite well. So touch wood, managed to stay healthy, which is the most important thing. Managed to stay mostly symptom-free, observing the social distancing rules, observing, you know, masks where you need to, staying home and working from home where you need to. I work in HR, so I work in human resources. So it's actually been, I don't want this to sound the wrong way, and so to any one of our listeners who have like had a particularly hard time, I totally appreciate where you're getting from. But for me, this has been a real learning curve, because things like the furlough scheme, you know, you think you have a hard time understanding it when it's affecting you as an employee. Well, imagine running it. Like it's just been crazy. So that's been really good, really, really positive to engage with, and you've got to find the positives where you can. But generally, yeah, everyone's healthy, and we've stayed pretty safe. So yeah, for us it's been good, but really good to be back and seeing you guys and talking F1.
It is definitely. What about you, Kyle? You've been doing good, managed to survive throughout.
Yeah, all good. Family and friends healthy. I've been healthy, so main thing, and I can't complain.
Definitely.
Yeah, but enjoying the return of sport for the last couple of months, which has been a big help.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And what better race to discuss than the two Silverstone races we've had? We're going to jump straight in with what I like to call Silverstone Part 1, which is officially titled the British Grand Prix. Now, let's go straight in at the deep end. I mean, this was pretty much dominated by the tyres, wasn't it?
It was. It absolutely was. And I just think it seems to be that Pirelli said a certain, like, oh, this tyre is a good race tyre and it should give you X amount of laps. And teams went on that. And some teams fell down on that. And you, at which point you've got to wonder how much stock are they putting in that advice, in that statement from the tyre manufacturers. How much running do they do to determine it themselves? How much running can they do to determine it themselves with the allocations that they have for a whole race weekend, practices, etc. We've had the, I mean, Kyle's the guy here really to talk to, because it was Kyle who came up with the modern tyre strategy format of requiring to use, you know, two of three compounds throughout a race. I believe that was you, wasn't it, Kyle? That was your idea.
I now want them to use all three, actually. I came up with the idea of three compounds that are, I didn't come up with the idea. It's just that, you know, maybe somebody listened, you never know.
They definitely did. Possibly. Definitely.
So the three compounds is an idea, but now I want them to actually use all three during the race. They have to use all three.
What about if it's, you can only qualify on one compound, and that's the compound you can't use in the race, or some kind of variation of that? Because some people might be like, well, obviously you'd qualify on the softest tyre because that would be the fastest. But would you, if you then knew that you were going to have a couple of laps in your, or a number of laps in your back pocket on the fastest tyre in the race when everyone else might be on the slowest? So maybe it's you have to use all three tyres, but over the course of both quali and the race, but you couldn't repeat what you use in quali. We're getting off topic. The tyres, Rich. Yeah, no, absolutely crazy. I mean, you had blowouts galore. You had management across the board. I mean, we talked in our, and I'm going to plug myself here, we talked in our podcast group on WhatsApp, and one of the things we talked about was how are you going to make back-to-back races at the same track interesting? And I said, I'd love to see them use different tyre compounds. That's exactly what they ended up doing. And I think, for me, one of the added bonuses of all of that last lap tyre carnage and last, like, 2-3 lap tyre carnage, one of the added bonuses was I already knew there was going to be a softer compounds across the board for the next weekend. And so you're already licking your chops thinking, if it was this weekend, what's it going to be like next weekend? That's going to be crazy. So not only was it really exciting to watch at the time, but it really set the table for what was to come, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It really made that kind of week period from one race to the next really exciting. Now, speaking of our WhatsApp group, there was, of course, plenty of chat going on there because the one and only Nico Hülkenberg returned for, well, in place temporarily, it seems, of Sergio Perez, who wasn't allowed to race or even be present at the circuit because he had a positive result for coronavirus, COVID-19. Hülkenberg stepped in. Now, he qualified pretty well, but he didn't get to start the race because of a mechanical failure. Now, I say, speaking of our WhatsApp group, because we're talking about this, and Ped, of course, you said...
I said, you watch, he'll have a stonking qualifying. Which he, I mean, he didn't. What was he, 12th?
Where did he qualify?
13th.
So not far off. So he was out of the top 10, didn't get into Q1, which was a bit of a shame. And I did say, hands up, this didn't age well as a message. But come back and talk to me when we're talking about Silverstone Part 2.
I will. We definitely will. But Hülkenberg, were you pleased to see him back, given a chance? Were you surprised?
Yeah, because it was a bit of a shame that he left the grid. He's just the obvious choice, wasn't he? I mean, he's just the obvious choice for any team.
Was he, though? Because surely Racing Point have a reserve driver.
That's the...
And isn't that the whole... So I'm asking the question. You guys are... I look to you guys as being far more... stat-based and almost tradition-based when it comes to your memory of Formula One is a lot more than mine. So my question to you is, in terms of the setup and how Formula One works traditionally, Hülkenberg's the sexy choice. He's the experienced driver. But if you genuinely think he's the guy that gives you the best chance to win, why isn't he already on your payroll? Why is your reserve driver someone that you don't trust enough to put in that car? But then, so that would be my first question is, why are you not giving that seat to your reserve driver? That's what it is. I think I have an answer, but I want to hear what you guys say.
Do they actually have an official reserve driver.
Gutierrez, isn't it?
From research I did, they share it with Mercedes, so it's Gutierrez or Van Dorn.
Yeah.
And Van Dorn, I think, is in Formula E, isn't he, now?
Yeah, so he was racing Formula E, and then they found out that Gutierrez doesn't actually have a super license or doesn't qualify for a super license because he hasn't raced for so long.
Oh, so there, so there are reasons.
That's been a flaw in the whole.
But then Nico Hülkenberg didn't have a super license either. They had to rush his through, is my understanding. So they had to rush him through prior to the race.
To be fair, I'd rather Hülkenberg than Gutierrez.
I wasn't.
But why would you rather Hülkenberg than Gutierrez?
Because Gutierrez had. He had several chances. Hülkenberg also had a lot of chances and probably better seats. For me, Gutierrez, he never really showed quite the same skill on track. Just when you see him drive, you always expected to see him simmer in the middle of the pack, and that just kind of was the expectation that I have of him. But I mean, he could have come in and done brilliantly, so yeah, you know, could have given him a chance at least.
But also, why haven't teams got solid reserve drivers in the circumstances we are in, the situation we're in? Surely they should have somebody lined up for that case.
But then that comes back, that's the age old question of, do you want to be a bit player on a championship team, or do you want to be the big fish in the small pond, and do you want to be the leader? So if I'm a successful, and I use the air quotes here, listeners, if I'm a successful driver like Nico Hülkenberg, and I use the air quotes because I know there'll be people out there who'll go, what are you talking about, Perry? He's not successful, he's never had a podium. I get that completely. I completely hear where you're coming from. But if you are, let's say, established, if you're an established dependable driver like Hülkenberg, do you want to go, when someone says, hey, we'll give you a spot in Formula One, but it's as a reserve driver, you'll do some of the testing, you might have to reduce some races, but likelihood is you won't. And now we also know that if someone does go down, we might even look to the outside market to find someone better than you. Or, I mean, but I don't even think he was racing. This is it. I think he was doing Formula One coverage for German television.
Yes.
I think that's what he was doing.
He was singing in a cafe on Thursday afternoon when he got the call.
Yeah, so it's not like he was in DTM, or it's not like he was in Formula E, or he was in, because actually those guys might be harder to release from contracts. But it's that question of, actually, I'm a competitor, I'm a racer, I want to keep racing, and I can't keep racing if I'm sat in a reserve seat in Formula One, so I'm going to go somewhere where I can regularly competitively be behind the wheel of a car. And that's why you're in this no man's land of, you've got reserve drivers that you trust to put a car around a track for testing, but you don't have drivers that you would trust to put around a track in anger. And maybe there needs to be some kind of clause introduced that's a buyout clause, that if a Formula One team comes calling, you get the opportunity to be released free of charge. So long-time listeners will know I'm a big NFL fan. There was the XFL and the Alliance of American Football and all of these younger startup leagues that aren't college football, but they're not the NFL, and they're somewhere in between. And they set up to have like a feeder team where people could come out of college, practice their skills at a professional level. But if the big leagues, as it were, if the NFL came a calling, they could be released from their contract with their team without penalty to the team and without penalty to the contract, to the sport. Now, what you could then argue is, well, actually, the NFL is only going to come from my best players. So you're taking away my best wide receiver, my best running back in the middle of my season. How are you going to compensate me? Because it all comes down to that. How are you going to compensate me? So if you're a Formula E team or an endurance racing team, Callum, if you're one of those teams and you've got a fantastic driver and Formula One comes knocking, how are they going to compensate you potentially for that loss? Because Formula One, whether people like it or not, is the pinnacle of motorsport. It's the one that's most known around the world. It's the one that's most recognised. We need to find a way to make sure we've regularly got the best drivers available for it.
I suppose
we don't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could.
That's right.
Because they'd listen to us, because we are improving. We're making Formula One better. But yeah, sorry, you were saying.
I say probably part of the problem is because every championship is so condensed. But normally you would probably have Formula one weekend, and you may have Formula E the following weekend, or DTM another weekend, or whatever. They're pretty spread out, so a driver could switch between the two. But obviously the problem was that it was Formula E on the same weekend and probably DTM. But it's found interesting that McLaren signed Paul de Rester up, didn't they?
Yeah.
After the first British round. And it's kind of like, it kind of felt like, oh, actually, that's probably a good idea. We probably should get somebody in as a reserve driver, just in case.
So, well, as long as he can see in his mirrors this time and doesn't upset Kimi Raikkonen. But to be honest, he's going to be so much faster than Raikkonen this season, so it probably won't be an issue.
Yeah.
here's my question around this, though.
My understanding is that George Russell is a Mercedes team youth, Mercedes program driver.
Yeah.
So I recognise that, you know, Williams have a contract, but Williams also have an agreement. And there's so much wink nod behind the back handshake stuff that goes on in Formula One. Wouldn't we have rather seen Hülkenberg dropped in, or Gutierrez, for example, forget Hülkenberg, Gutierrez, who's the reserve driver, get him, or whoever, wouldn't we have rather seen some no-name chump dropped into a Williams? And wouldn't you have rather seen Russell in that Racing Point? I mean, he's a Mercedes driver. As you say, they already share their reserves in terms of Van Dorn and Gutierrez. Wouldn't you rather have seen Mercedes flex muscles, Racing Point flex some muscle, assuming they have some, to say, actually, no, do you know what, Williams? You're not being competitive. If you want this guy, you know, if we want this guy, if you want to continue using our engines, if you want to continue this, that and the other, this is the cost it's going to take. We want George for this race. Well, can you do that in a season swap? I don't know.
George also, of course, saying that the it's basically a pink Mercedes that's copied last year's car. George knows that car well because he drove in the testing. So, I mean, arguably, he'd be very, very quick, potentially quicker than both their drivers.
I suppose his contract with Williams was tight enough that he stayed, because I'm sure he would have taken the opportunity. Although, it would have been a bit... does that one race, or would have been two races probably, and then he goes back to Williams and he's still got, what, 18 months on a deal? Would it have been awkward for him to walk back and like, oh, you're back now, you had your fun in for two rounds?
No, but I think that's where we need to be clear that it comes from the top, that it's not George going and knocking on the door and going, hey Toto, get me out of here.
Yeah.
It's them coming to Williams and going, you've got one of our drivers on contract, we need him because we're in the Sturm. We're going to lend him out here. I mean, stuff like that. I'll probably get loads of people telling me, no, it can't happen because of this, this and this. And I get that. But it would have just been nice. Wouldn't it have been nice?
It did kind of... What was it? I've completely forgotten the guy's name. Cabin at the Canadian Grand Prix. There's a McLaren driver that couldn't race. De La Rosa?
Pedro De La Rosa.
Yes, he was... I'm sure he was at Sauber at the time, and actually McLaren pulled him out. He's still McLaren contracted, and he raced. I can't remember why or who pulled out and didn't race, but so it is. I suppose it's all down to contracts, I suppose. Isn't it?
Was that when Montoya got bored and ran away, and then they called De La Rosa in, or was that?
I think it was after that. I think it was like probably 10 years ago now. I'm trying to think, he wouldn't have raced. Anyway, it'll come to me middle of the night.
I feel like we've run away with it. But yeah, it was great to see Nico Hülkenberg back on the grid. Don't get me wrong. I was thrilled with that. But I feel like there could have been a better solution to provide more competitive racing than grabbing someone off the couch. That's my perspective on it.
No, that's fair enough. It's good. It's good chat. Because it means we've got plenty more to talk about as well. And speaking of which, still Silverstone Part 1, British Grand Prix. There was also quite a few big crashes. Started in practice, Albon had a big off into the barriers. Very hard. It was into the actual Armco barriers as well, missed the tyres. And then it continued into the race where he kind of had a bit of a tangle with Magnussen on the first lap. And Magnussen flew off again, into the tyre barrier this time. But I mean, real mess of his car. And then probably the scariest of all, as it was entering Maggots Beckett's, I think it was, Kvyat, where he had the right rear hub, so I gather, failed because it was too hot. It exploded, basically, forcing him into a spin, which must have been about 190-odd miles an hour going through there. And, I mean, that was heavy impact. I mean, they put a tyre barrier there, I think, the following week. But, I mean, big crashes this week. What was going on?
I think Magnussen was... should say pushed into the gravel trap from Albon's ambitious move. But yeah, the Kvyat one was... he's quite lucky, really, in a way. So, I suppose they're not expecting crashes there, so they haven't got the full proper tyre barrier there. Mm. So he was quite lucky. Although I did find it quite funny that he seemed to... well, he sort of apologised, didn't he? And the team didn't seem to say that... Oh, no worries. It wasn't your fault. It looked a car issue, didn't it, from the time it happened, which I thought was a bit strange.
Yeah, it was very, very strange, because the way that he went in, he apologised to the team a lot, and then he was really angry afterwards. And this is one thing I've got written down in my notes. Why was he so angry? And I was thinking, do you think this is some behind-the-scenes pressure going on? Because I'm convinced at the minute that Red Bull are making things deliberately difficult for Alex Albon so that they can ship him back to Toro Rosso for next year, or AlphaTauri, and then bring Vettel in alongside Verstappen so they can have their best chance at a championship. And then they're trying to find an excuse to get rid of Kvyat from the AlphaTauri car.
I'll counter that with, I don't think bringing Vettel in is your best chance at a championship. The way he's driving at the moment, I really don't think it is. I don't think Vettel would do it. I don't think Red Bull would do it. I think Red Bull would see it as a backward step. I don't think Max would allow it, and Max is their ticket at the moment. I think his anger was because, until he would have looked at that it was a car issue and it would have been confirmed to him, he thinks he's just made a rookie mistake. And he can't fathom it in his head. And he's just like, I've put a tyre wide, I've gone here, I've done that. I've lost it. I haven't been able to regain it. I've been made to look a mug on national television. International television. And now someone's sticking a camera in my face. Well, piss off, I'm not having any of it. Sorry, you're going to have to beat that. You know, I'm not having any of it. And I can completely understand it. And I think, you know, maybe it was a car issue, but the team's under no obligation to tell us that. You know, the team's under no obligation to come out and go, they'll sit down with Danny, like, you know, face to face and go, look, mate, it wasn't your fault. Here's the telemetry. Here's everything we saw. We'll get it fixed for next time. Don't worry. And, you know, weight off his shoulders, absolutely fine. I'm with you in that Albon is struggling, and I think Albon is struggling because he's not necessarily being given the full resources that Max is being given. And I think that the team views that second chair as a revolving door, that it's whoever will help the team. You say, you know, getting rid of him next year, I think you could see Albon gone middle of this year, almost a reverse of what we saw last year, where Gasly was in that Red Bull, Albon was flying. I mean, I'm not going to, again, toot the own horn, but I did call it. Gasly was, you know, suffering. Albon was flying. They made the switch. It was great towards the end of last year. This year, Albon's suffering. Gasly's putting in some great performances. And I also think, potentially, Danny's getting frustrated because why is he never the one being talked about as that second Red Bull seat? It's always... Well, if you know, now you hear the commentators talking about it, you know, Gasly's making a good push for that seat. Nobody's saying, let's bring Danny Fiat up, because he's one of those guys that is never going to be threatening for a race win. Is Pierre Gasly? Don't know.
Time will tell, time will tell. That's a very good point. So, one more thing to touch on from the British Grand Prix was something we had sent to us on Twitter by Sam Todd. Thanks again for the tweet, Sam, and for the following that you do. It's brilliant. But a tweet we received from Sam basically was kind of referring to the safety car period and how cars managed to kind of gain positions and lose positions and maintain positions and everything. Now, this is where we can play a bit of Lewis Hamilton bingo, because I think every single race where there's a safety car, Lewis Hamilton says the words, the safety car is too slow.
Safety car needs to speed up, man. Safety car needs to speed up, man. It's going too slow.
Good impression.
Let's write down these phrases. Let's get 6-8 phrases. I don't know. 9 phrases. That'd be better, because then it's a square.
Yeah.
Let's get these phrases.
3x3 grid, yeah.
Yeah. Let's get these phrases down, and let's just...
Hamilton safety car bingo.
Yeah,
I'm on it.
Let's do it. We should do that. And next race, we'll try and tweet it out as our
own. Listeners, your job is to tweet us phrases that you believe Lewis Hamilton would say following the safety car.
That's it. And then the race after the Spanish Grand Prix, which is the
coming up.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like, yeah. The car behind me, what tyres he on or something, he's always intrigued by that, isn't he? Or we should have come in, should we, whatever he doesn't do, if he can't, he comes in, he's always questioning whether that decision was right.
That's it. We'll get it set up the week after the Spanish Grand Prix, and we can play Lewis Hamilton radio bingo the following week.
That's actually one of the funniest bits I found with the onboard from the radio over his last lap of that first race. Because he's often on the radio to Bono going, these tyres aren't going to last, these tyres aren't going to last, isn't he? They often do last and he wins a Grand Prix easily.
Spa. Oh. Lewis Hamilton, safety car bingo at Spa.
This day has just got better and we're not even at the Belgian Grand Prix yet. Oh, I cannot wait.
So good.
But
sorry, Kyle.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton on the last lap saying about tyres.
No, because he's constantly moaning about tyres. Bono, these aren't going to last. Rear tyres aren't going to last. Blah, blah, blah. But he seems so calm on that last lap. He's like, left front, yeah, it's happened to me. And then it's just constant, and it's just Bono just go, just, you know, 25 seconds, 20 seconds. And it's just like, actually, when he actually has a tyre failure, he's probably calmer than when his tyres are probably fine, which I thought was, you know, Lewis Hamilton.
It felt like, we'll come to it, because you brought it up at the beginning and I went off on a tangent, but I'll come to it. I don't know if anyone else felt this way. I'll admit to being a Lewis Hamilton fan, and I will be the first person to put my hands up and say, if it was Seb Vettel who had done this, then maybe I wouldn't be as effusive. Maybe. I don't know. But maybe I would. But the point is, that last lap where you knew that tyre was going to go. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. You knew that tyre was going to go. And so you had the expectation, and then it went. And watching someone win a Grand Prix, doing what they needed to do to keep the car on the track. So, A, you know you've got someone closing on fresh tyres. B, so you've got to stay ahead of them. You can't go too fast because you know you'll lose control. So it's finding that razor's edge, staying fast enough to stay ahead, but staying controlled enough to not go off the track. To me, that last lap felt like one of those things of Mansell pushing his car. It felt like Senna stuck in sixth gear. It was one of those iconic drives. And it felt like, you know those times where you know you're watching history? Jenson Button's last lap at the Canadian Grand Prix 2011. So iconic history, you can never forget it. But you know, but immediately when I say Jenson Button's last lap at the Canadian Grand Prix, you know what I mean.
We knew the year, yeah.
Lewis Hamilton's last corner overtake to win the British Grand Prix, you know what I mean. You know, Felipe Massa losing the championship on the last corner, you know what I mean. You're witnessing history. You're witnessing one of those iconic racing moments from one of, if not the greatest of all time. So for me, that finish was, I was forward, I had my elbows on my knees, I had my hands chewing on my nails, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. And like Hamilton or not, like Verstappen or not, like any of it or not, that's compelling television. It was fantastic.
Definitely, it really was. It was so exciting. Now, of course, because we saw Bottas have his failure, Verstappen, Red Bull, they came in, changed their tyres, nothing to lose, they still came out in the second position, which they gained obviously from Bottas's failure. So many people criticising the team, saying, oh, they would have won the race because of Hamilton's failure and all this. Now, one word answer, yes or no, would Red Bull have won the race if they had not have pitted?
Yes.
Yes.
You think they would?
Yeah.
Now ask me one word answer whether I think pitting was the right call.
Go for it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Because totally agree. Had they not pitted, they could have suffered a catastrophic tyre failure. And when you allow your driver to stay out, are you listening, Mercedes? When you allow your driver to stay out and you know that there is a high risk of a catastrophic tyre failure, you don't just risk the win, you risk their safety.
Absolutely. Remember, again, you were talking about history, 2013, British Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton, first year in Mercedes, he came round onto the Wellington straight?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
The back straight, isn't it? Anyway, as we know it.
Yeah.
Hanger straight's the back straight, isn't it?
The sort of new straight, you mean?
After Maggot's Becketts, wasn't it? Or was it before then?
I thought it was the new bit.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
It was the new bit, yeah. My bad.
We cut all that.
Yeah. So Lewis Hamilton in 2013 came round
the Wellington straight.
Wellington straight. I forgot that quickly. But yeah, tyre failure, boom. And he was the first of about five different failures. And that was, it could have been as bad as that if, you know, if Red Bull hadn't have pitted. So I think good on them, like you say.
It was absolutely the right call. But also, you have to, if you understand a little bit more about how the human brain works when you've got things like this, about loss prevention, loss aversion, the idea of if we stay out, we could have a catastrophic tyre failure and we could lose, like Carlos Sainz, like Valtteri Bottas, we could lose all of our spaces. We could go all the way back out of the points. If we pit, we don't lose anything, we pretty much guarantee second place. So do we add a possible win? Because they didn't know that Lewis's D-Lam wouldn't have him spin off the track. They didn't know. It was absolutely the right call to do. Looking back now, you can tell that they would have won the race if they hadn't pitted. But it was the right call to make because it covered off far more options and gave you far more chances of success individually as well as collectively than it did if you hadn't pitted.
And they gained a point for fastest lap.
Very
from
true.
Where they were. Second place, and they got second place plus the fastest lap. So
very true. Very true. So I think that's pretty much the British Grand Prix roundup. So we should take this opportunity to let you know of all the ways to get in touch with us at the NRF1 podcast. The best place to start is patreon.com/NRF1. That's patreon.com/NRF1. We're currently in the process of updating all of this, so there'll be loads on offer soon, including the usual extended podcast. Right now we're doing a bumper podcast because it's very difficult to get two podcasts out. But more on that later. We'll explain it properly in the future. And there's also going to be new ways and channels you can join us and speak directly with some of the crew and much more. So do keep your eyes peeled on Patreon. And if you're listening to us right now on Patreon, then thank you for your continued support. Other ways to get in touch and stay in touch is, of course, social media. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. The handle for all three of these is @thenrf1. And email us as well. Any questions and opinions and whatnot, email us. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay, so let's move on to what I like to call Silverstone Part 2, but is officially the 70th anniversary Grand Prix. And I mean, bit of deja vu once again, all about the tyres, softer compounds. And it basically worked out that the medium tyres at the first race were then the hard tyres, and the soft tyres were the medium tyres. Is that correct?
Say that again.
So the medium tyres from the first race became the hard tyres, and the soft tyres became the medium tyres, and then we had a new compound of soft, yeah?
You are correct. Richard.
Yeah. So even softer compound tyres, two-stop race was what everyone was expecting. What did you think of it?
Well, it was a big surprise, wasn't it? We were all expecting Mercedes to run away with it again, and a young chap from Holland sort of hung around and was quick enough and with strategy, deserved his win. It's just nice for somebody else to win apart from Mercedes. But
of course,
it is. People were moaning about the tyres, but it added something new, and it was different. And teams have to think about it, and that's what often, if teams aren't in the comfort zone, often creates good racing.
Definitely. And you have to say, if it was the same tyres as the previous week, it probably would have just been a replay. They could have, probably been the same result because the Mercedes seemed so far ahead. But this one, the big difference seemed to be Verstappen getting through Q2 on the harder compound tyres. So we could start the race on the hard tyres, where the Mercedes then started on the medium tyres. so Verstappen could go further in the race. And of course, as soon as the Mercedes's tyres started falling off, the Red Bull still had tyres in okay shape to stay with them and, you know, even fight them for position.
Do you think, obviously the strategy was part of it, but do you think Verstappen would have won anyway, just as, even if he'd have started on the medium and followed exactly what Mercedes on?
Potentially,
he seems quicker than them anyway.
His pace seemed the same as them, you know, if not quicker, on the exact same tyres. So it really comes down to who would look after them best. But I mean, my idea when the tyres are that soft and falling off, my idea is just bomb it for a few laps, pit, get some new tyres, bomb it, but that's not really doable, of course, in the world of Formula 1. But I mean, what did you think of the strategy for the Mercedes and Red Bulls? Obviously different strategies. Did you enjoy it? What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I liked that they kept Lewis out for as long as they did, because it was very much can he eke this out? Because I mean, he wasn't, you know, expecting. I don't think he was expecting much. He started second, and so to be leading him with a chance of a win would be great, when he knew that second was pretty much there for him anyway. I think, you know, yeah, eke it out, see what you can do. That added the drama. You had a very similar situation that you had at the end of the previous race, which was Verstappen out there closing. And what do you do? And I think you were looking at a similar situation. I think Mercedes kind of recognised that actually, if we had another situation like we had last week, Verstappen wouldn't have to stop this time. He'd be very comfortable to just wing through anyway. So let's see what happens. Maybe he gets some traffic, and maybe we can take him. Again, right call. I absolutely think it's the right call. But it still made for very exciting racing.
Yeah, definitely. Now, of course, the Mercedes really ate to their tyres. I like that phrase, so I'm definitely going to use that again. But they just seem to chew them up horribly. As soon as they put a new set on, they seem to be just covered in blisters and shredded within
not many laps. Ugly blisters as well. I mean, it looked like someone had taken a knife and scored down them.
Oh, absolutely. It was horrible looking at them on the slow-mo replays and everything.
Yeah, awful.
Now, I was chatting with my dad about this, and his idea was basically that it seemed Hamilton was trying to push Bottas on the hard tyres to force him into trouble. Of course, by doing this, it resulted in both of them getting the horrible blisters. Now, what he's saying, you know, after the first set of pit stops, I went from the medium to the hard tyres, Bottas pitted a lap before, and of course, gained a little bit more lead. So Hamilton was like, right, let's close up, pushed his tyres. Now, Hamilton's tyres, of course, looked worse than Bottas's, but then for the second stint, he pitted later, much later than Bottas did. As Bottas kind of matched Verstappen on that, pretty much. So it seemed a very strange situation. But what do you think? Do you think Hamilton was trying to push, think, you know, not really worrying about what was behind until it was too late, or do you think it was just that tyre on that car?
I don't think they had much choice. I think even when the Mercedes put on the new hard tyre, they weren't actually any quicker. They just seemed to keep it at a steady pace. And I was surprised that Hamilton managed to go on as long as he did. And also the gap. I think towards the end of his stint that Red Bull actually decided that, hang on a sec, he might stay out, speed up a bit. But his pace compared to Bottas was still quite close. That's probably why Bottas ended up losing his second place in the end. I just didn't think they had much choice. I mean, a lot of people saying it was a disaster for Mercedes, but they were still quick enough to finish second and third. And,
I mean, in the overall picture of World Championship standings, nothing really changed. I mean, it was a bigger blow for Bottas, who, of course, with a tyre failure from the first race, didn't get any points. In this one, where he looked, you know, qualified pole and thought, I can win this. And then he kind of went on and he fell behind Hamilton again. And, of course, the different strategies, he must have felt a bit cheated from it and a bit kind of downhearted from it. But at the end of the day, second and third for the Mercedes, it's still a lot of points for the team, and that's what they ultimately care about.
Here's the difference between those three top drivers. You're quite right. I think your dad's quite right. I think Lewis hated being out-qualified by Valtteri. I think he hated it because he is the fastest man on that grid. Doesn't matter that it's the car. Forget the fact that it's a Mercedes. You put him on a scooter. He's the fastest man on that grid, and he will want to prove that. I'm not saying that that's what I believe. I'm saying that that's his mentality. He believes he's the fastest man on that grid. It will irk him that Valtteri put in a better lap than him to get pole. So he will absolutely have been pushing Valtteri all the way. You know, regardless of strategy, you can't tell Lewis to back off. And I love the point that Max made, which was when someone said to him, you've got to calm down, you've got to back off, you've got to watch his tyres. And he said, you're kidding me. This is the first chance we've got to push the Mercs. I'm not driving like a grandma. I don't think I've ever heard Bottas say anything like that. Or if I have heard him say it, I don't think I've heard him say it with the conviction that Max says it with and that Lewis says it with. And I just think, yeah, he's that's the difference for me is, yeah, the tyres will go, but I also have confidence in my own ability that if the tyres do go, I can still wring everything out of this car. That's for me, that's the difference between those top three guys.
Definitely. And we will get onto the radio messages shortly.
Sorry, I've jumped ahead. Apologies.
That's okay. I will. But we're going back to something we mentioned earlier. Of course, Nico Hülkenberg, he stayed again as Sergio Perez had another positive test come through. So get well soon, Sergio. You have all our best wishes from the NRF1 podcast and the Rush Cutters Pub, which is very, very busy today. So, yeah, lots of people. But, yeah, Nico Hülkenberg, he stayed with the Racing Point team. Now, I'm not even going to say anything apart from he qualified third. Over to bed.
Called it. he did. He had a stonking qualifying, and he did really. You know, it was. Race aside, because we'll obviously talk about the race, but race aside, you know, the race wasn't fantastic for him. He dropped down quite a few places. Kyle will be able to tell me where he finished because I can't remember.
Seventh. He was fifth.
You know, had to stop again, but still, even dropping down to fifth from third, not ideal. But the guy, let's put this in context. The guy didn't even race last weekend, the previous weekend, and he was doing broadcasting 3 days before that. To take a car and put it on third is not only a testimony, as oh, it's a pink Mercedes. Yes, it's a great car, and we'll come on to all of the brake duct crap in a minute. But yes, it's a great car, but you have to be a good driver, not just competent, a good driver to get that car into third position and to maintain a position in the top 10 throughout that whole race. So, I mean, hats off to him. I think it was a fantastic drive from him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, starting third, finishing seventh, some people would say it doesn't matter what you look at, you know, that's a poor performance. You shouldn't be losing places if you're that fast. But at the end of the day, that race was completely different to the qualifying session. Did anyone actually expect him to get on the podium this weekend in the race?
No, not at all.
For him, he made an impression. He came back qualifying third, made an impression for teams next year to possibly bring him back into F1. Also, his helmet was really cool. It's a proper cool helmet.
Yeah, and also, I mean, Racing Point are up there. Racing Point seems to be Aston Martin, whatever. They're up there rubbing their fists, you know, hands together in glee because they've got a car qualifying on the second row of the grid. So, yeah, Hülkenberg's putting himself out there and going, look at me, I'm doing really, really well. Someone hire me next year. But they're coming out there and going, hey, anybody out there want to sponsor a car that's on the second row of the grid that isn't a Ferrari or a Red Bull? Because here's your chance. So they're bloody loving it. Lance isn't putting it on the second row of the grid in third.
No.
Checo's probably not putting it on third. Love Checo. Great driver. You know, does what he does. But he is not putting it on the second row of the grid. If you'd have asked me 2 years ago, would Hülkenberg put it? I mean, I know he's got a pole to his name. But would he have put it on the second row of the grid? I'd have said probably not. So it was an eye-opener, but it shows you what that car's capable of.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the radio messages already. Something that amused me quite a lot was the YouTube video of the best radio from the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, and there was one of Verstappen's radio messages where I think he was pretty angry with Lance Stroll, because Stroll was just kind of sitting there slowly in the middle of Marcus Beckett's, and Verstappen was coming through at full speed, and Verstappen's radio message was this exactly: beep 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 beep. Now, how the hell did a radio message, which was just beeps, get onto the best radio video on YouTube? Come on, Formula One, what are you doing?
Because things are best when they're left to the imagination. Because the thing is, he could have actually said, "Oh dear, Mr. Stroll, that's unfortunate." But all you need to do is put beeps over it, and people wonder what the heck he said. Now, you could beep, if you want to, you could beep when I just said heck, because it was just heck. But if you beeped it, people would be thinking I said something much worse, because why else would you beep it? Do you feel what I'm saying here?
That's very true. I might get my beep machine out for this.
Do it.
But yeah, there was a lot of radio messages flying around, and like you said, Verstappen saying, you know, he's not going to drive like a grandma. And the other one, of course, from Verstappen, which kind of echoed on from last week, was him telling his engineer, "Oh, did you remember to sanitize? Did you hydrate? Did you remember to drink and all this?" And I suppose he's getting his own back a bit on his engineer.
I didn't find it particularly funny, actually. I was just like, get on with it, Max.
Yeah, just concentrate on the racing. Because, and I'll tell you this, yeah, he won the race, and that's great. And he had a good finish the week before. But here's the thing. If he'd stuck it in a wall, this is exactly what people would be pointing to. They would be saying he's immature because of his age. He's not concentrating on the race. He's too busy talking about all kinds of rubbish. I like personality. I don't like personality when it feels forced. Max has personality. I don't want him to be that person that tries too hard. But ultimately, you know, Max, you be you and do what you do to make. If it makes you happy, son, you go be happy.
Definitely. Now, of course, there were some other radio messages floating around over the weekend. One of them from Ferrari Outcast, as I'm now going to describe him as, Sebastian Vettel. Now he was just like, you know, when you're a kid and you did something wrong and your mum and dad turned around to you and said, "I'm not angry, I'm just very disappointed." that classic line. Now, this was Sebastian Vettel with the Ferrari team, and I haven't got the full quote with me, but in short, it was basically, "You know you've messed up."
Yes, that was a killer line, wasn't it?
Yeah.
"You know you've messed up." You're like, yes. Ooh, that's just looking like a horrible divorce, isn't it?
But I think it was Martin Brundle made a great point on the Sky F1 coverage, and I will come back to the Sky F1 coverage. But Martin Brundle made a very good point in the commentary box, and he said, actually, because what I think Seb was talking about there is where they'd pitted him and where he'd been put back out into traffic. And he said, you know you've messed up. But when they put him out, he wasn't actually in traffic to begin with, and it was only because Carlos Sainz had a massive problem at his pit stop that he ended up being in and around Sainz. And so, you know, Brundle sort of said, he's like, actually, if Sainz hadn't had a messed up pit stop, Vettel probably would have found himself in clear air. But also, you're a four-time world champion in a Ferrari. Your job is to get past other cars and not to be a dick about it. So get the job done. But as you say, Carl, really, that's going to be a very messy split up.
And the final thing we need to, of course, talk about with the 70th anniversary Grand Prix. Now, this was a weird one, but there were big screens around the circuit and we could see them on the TV coverage. And during this, we could see the fans celebrating and cheering on their drivers and everything. There was one guy who was a Norris fan and it just said, "Go Norris" on the screen. And this guy just started pouring milk all over himself. Now, what the what was going on for this guy? I mean, I know the milk references with Norris and all that, but that's just surely that's just one of those things. People will do anything to get on TV, right?
Nailed it. It's exposure, and by talking about it now, we're validating it. So I'm out. I'm not talking about it anymore.
Did we like to see fans on the big screen, though?
No.
Carl's completely checked out of that.
I don't need to see it. was the worst one. The Nico, was it Nico Rosberg in Hamburg?
Yeah, Nico Rosberg.
Oh, just go away.
That was the title of our last podcast, Nico Rosberg, yeah, the Hamilton fan, because yeah. I think Hamilton was then driving around the corner.
Yeah, he was going
and really Rosberg was sat there cheering, and it was like, oh.
And it just looks so contrived, and it looks fake, and it doesn't work for me either. I don't need to see it. I trust that people are enjoying the product. Maybe Liberty Media need to see it to stroke their own egos and validate what they're doing. But
if there's a crowd there at the time, like I can imagine at the British Grand Prix part one, the last lap, it would have been amazing if you probably would have heard the crowd, wouldn't you? And see parts of the crowd and the reaction of when it happened. That, yeah, because it's live and it's there, but it's just some like pre-recording himself, you know, pouring milk over himself. I have no interest in that whatsoever. Yeah.
No one would do that at a Grand Prix. It's not the Indy 500 where you get a pint of milk for winning. It's like,
no, and he's not doing that live. He's not doing that while the race is going on, because he'd then have to get up and go and wash and clean himself down and miss half the race.
Yeah.
So, well, all right, maybe not half the race. No, I don't take that long when I shower myself down from being covered in milk. Not that it happens very often.
I mean, it depends how old the milk is, because if it's like a bit creamy, then that's going to take a while to wash off.
Especially when it's warm weather as well.
Oh, once it gets hot.
Oh, warm weather, that right, smell. Oh. Well, good luck to that guy for getting the stench of
he's probably
hot
listening.
Milk.
He's probably listening.
I'm sure he is.
Not anymore.
Yeah. I saw the week before their advertising was like, you know, you could be on this. It was one of those like
fan
cam things, and it said what to do. And it was my dad's birthday was the Monday, and I was like, you know what? Thank you very much. I'll pass those on to him. I'm sure we'd like it. But I thought, oh, this could be great. We could go sit in the garden. I could sit there with my dad. We can watch the Formula One. We can cheer. It can be him celebrating his 70-something birthday with the 70th anniversary Grand Prix. I was like, this could be brilliant. And I'll be honest, I went on the website because it said goonf1.com. I went on there and I couldn't see at all where you had to go to do it. I might have just been stupid, but I tried it at least 3 times and I couldn't see it. So I quickly gave up. And I'll be honest, now I'm pretty glad we weren't there, because... Oh, it was a bit cheesy, let's put it that way. As was that guy's milk, so.
Yeah, good way of putting it.
But I think that pretty much rounds up the British Grand Prix. Grand Prix, whatever the plural's odd, because it's French.
Races.
That nicely rounds up the British races.
Thank you.
So we've got another thing we need to touch on. This is really important, and this is the Norfolk Notebook. Now, we take a claim to several drivers and teams here in Norfolk, because this is the home of Formula One.
It's the heartland. The heartland.
The heartland. The heartland. Senna used to own a place literally 5 minutes up the road from here.
That's it.
So we'll go straight in there. Alex Albon, first of all. I don't know if it was just me, but he doesn't look his usual self. He didn't seem his usual happy, jokey. So he seemed a bit on edge and a bit down.
I think he's heard the comments. I think he's heard people talking. And I think he wants to show what he's about. And I think it's almost that someone's had a word in his ear and gone, you know, laughing and joking is all well and good when you're performing, but if you're not performing, it just doesn't reflect very well. So maybe a bit more serious, a bit more performance, a bit more showing up, and then you can laugh all you want, you know, beat him on the scoreboard and then laugh all the way home. At the moment, he's not beating him on the scoreboard.
Right. And for the British Grand Prix, he was 8th, and then the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, he was 5th. So, I mean... For the Red Bull team, when obviously his teammate won one of the races, not ideal. The other guy, who I thought, to be honest, has looked pretty good this season, George Russell. He was 12th in the British Grand Prix and then 18th in the 70th Grand Prix. But I mean, the 12th position in the British Grand Prix, okay, a bit of luck with the tyre failures, but... I thought he's looked pretty good this year, and especially over the British Grand Prix.
It's really... I mean, his qualifying performances this year, you couldn't say he's, for the car he's in and comparing to his teammate and stuff, that he's the qualifier of the year so far. I mean, he's obviously not gotten to Q3, but his performances on Saturdays have been immense.
He's not far off Q3.
Exactly.
So right here, right now, by the end of the year, Do you think George Russell will be in Q3? Do you think we will have seen a Williams run in anger in Q3 by the end of this season?
I think we'll see one get in there. I think he'll squeeze into 10th place, whether it's wet weather or something like that, which, I mean, Belgium coming up, who knows? But I think he could do it.
You reckon yes, Kyle?
No.
So no. Deciding vote from me. This is not how I wanted it to go down. I did not want the pressure. I'm going to say yes, because positivity. I'm going to speak it into the world. Yeah, I want to see George. I mean, if it's Latifi, fine. But I want to see George Russell break that Q3, because he's been so close. He's so good.
He's such a good driver. He really is.
So talented.
And there's an actual team, an F2 team, which is still Formula 1 in our book, because it's still part of the same circus. But Virtuosi Racing, they're based just up the road in Attleboro. Now, I don't know overall how the team did across the weekend, but I know they've been up the front this season. Two drivers, Callum Ilott and Guan Yu Zhou, they've been driving very well. And I do know Callum Ilott won the feature race for the 70th anniversary Grand Prix. So another British driver, I can't talk, it's been a long night. Another British driver winning a race in F2. Could he get a Formula 1 move sometime in the next few years?
Yes, he's a Ferrari Academy driver, so you never know. Alfa Romeo, Sauber. He dominated the feature race, which is the real race of the weekend for F2, because the reverse grid nonsense on Sundays is pointless. But yeah, he won, like, 8 seconds, I think he won by. So, dominated it. And he's a bit unlucky the last weekend. I mean, he stalled on the grid. So he's looking pretty good. And also, I think, the F2, I want to double check this, but I think there's a high-tech racing team, and the owner comes from Norfolk as well.
Oh, brilliant. So we've got two teams. We will double check this.
Yeah, I recognise his name from karting at Beckles. He was, like, a really good karter.
This of course, is coming from the two-time champion.
And then Kyle says he was a really good karter, but was he a multi-time champion?
He was. I think he was, like, Red Bull Junior.
was he better than you, Kyle?
He's not better than me, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I just raced the cheap stuff. He was, like, proper. He was,
yeah, that's brilliant. Well, we'll check that. Check.
We'll look into that.
But yeah, I mean, Callum Ilott, young Ferrari driver. So you never know when Kimi Raikkonen retires in probably
10 years.
10 years, yeah. Who knows? It's going to be some time, but we might see another young British driver on the grid. But yeah, I think that pretty much wraps up everything from the Norfolk Notebook. But of course, if anyone listening has opinions to give us for any Norfolk F1 news, get in touch. Let us know. But we're gonna swiftly move on, and we're gonna really rattle through these. That's something Michael loves to say. Rattle through these. But we're going to do the Of the Weekend Awards. So we're gonna wrap up both British Grand Prix weekends, Silverstone races, into the Weekend Awards. So the first one is Rodolfo Gonzalez, Driver of the Weekends.
So who is the best driver over both races? I feel the obvious answer is Lewis Hamilton, because he won a race on three tyres, and then he managed to, you know, keep his second place when his teammate dropped two places, again on crappy tyres, and he managed to maintain his lead in the championship. So, I mean, who's done it the best over the weekend? It's him. Who is the driver that I probably enjoyed watching most over the weekend, or I feel gave me or kind of did the best stuff? Do you know what? I'm going to really give a big props up to Charles Leclerc.
Yep.
We've barely talked about him, and he is wringing every last drop of performance out of that Ferrari. When you look at where his teammate is, again, a four-time world champion, dropping down at the bottom of the pack, I think watching Charles drive at the moment is actually a real pleasure.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that, because I just looked at my notes and he was third in the British Grand Prix and fourth in the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, so he really performed well. A third and a fourth for that Ferrari is not special.
You know, rocking a podium.
Yeah, totally agree. When Vettel finished 10th and 12th, I think that's all.
Yeah,
so, yeah, there you go.
Strong.
Yeah. Press up. Next up is the Team Lotus Team of the Weekends.
I feel like the AlphaTauri ran well. I feel like we're seeing good things out of them. So maybe I give it to them. I feel, you know, Red Bull managed to get a win out of it.
So that you got to give them that. So I'm going to go one of those two. So okay, anything that's got a bull on the side of it.
Yeah, I probably agree with Red Bull. It's kind of weird because it's like McLaren had over the two weekends. McLaren had like a period where they looked good. In Renault, then like was Danny Rick the fourth he qualified for the last one.
Yeah, I think it was fourth. Yeah,
was yeah. Like they had a good bit.
Or fifth.
Maybe
I think it was fifth.
But they had like sort of their midfield teams had parts that look quite good. But yeah, I think Red Bull just for winning when Mercedes dominated all year.
Can I give an extra heads up to a team of the weekend who did fantastically, which is the Sky Sports Formula One coverage team, because they did such a good job of making the anniversary race feel like a different race.
Definitely.
It wasn't just, you know, we've called it Silverstone Part 2 because that's how we are to talk about it, but they made it feel different. Their outfits were throwbacks to, you know, 70 years ago. They put together, I know a lot of this was F1 as well, but there were different signs up. There was designs all around. They pulled together some wonderful features. They did a fantastic feature on Stirling Moss where they drove around in Stirling Moss's cars. It just felt like it was very well thought out. It wasn't just let's rush it through or let's phone it in because of COVID and it's, you know, we're limited on what we can do. Forget that. I think they did a fantastic job. I don't know why they needed to show Pastor Maldonado winning in the tribute video to 70 years of Formula One. I don't think that was necessary. It kind of put me off the whole thing, if I'm honest. But I think the Sky Sports presentation team, the media team, deserve a bit of a clap there as well.
I love that. And that perfectly brings us on as well to the Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. So the guy who really screwed it up bad.
Is there a reason I can't say Romain Grosjean? I feel that he's...
Well, the first race, he had some very dubious blocking going on.
Yeah, he's moving under braking, he's moving twice, he's being an idiot. And I feel, does anyone else feel like the words closing speed were uttered more times than anything this weekend? It's like suddenly someone's just found this new toy and they're like talking about closing speed all the time. It's just become a real buzzword. But yeah, oh, Romain Grosjean, what a mug.
I'll tell you something, in Grosjean's defence, because I love to do this, one thing I will say about his like hard defending, he was trying to really drive all that was in that car. He knew that he was going to be overtaken, so he was using, I think, every single trick in the book, even if it meant being a bit like Michael Schumacher back in the day, just blocking, you know. He was trying it just to try and salvage something for the team and some points.
Yeah, I don't have to like it.
But no, very true.
Fair dues to Haas for trying something different a few races this year. But yeah, Grosjean's, I mean, that one on Danny Rick was, that's just dangerous, and he's lucky. But especially when he's what, head of the GPDA, whatever
it's called. Driver Association. Yeah. He's your shop steward, for Christ's sake. I mean, come on.
Oh, I love it. And finally, the Giuliano Salvi moments of the weekend. Apart from Lando Norris's milkman.
I think it has to be that moment the camera pans to Lewis Hamilton, black front left tyre.
Just to go further on this, now this was something that was on the worldwide Formula One feed, which was, you know, the worldwide broadcast. But Bottas got the puncture, and we're like, crap, this could happen to Hamilton, but this is going to be bad. 30 seconds later, it cuts to an onboard of Bottas, but we didn't know it was onboard of Bottas because you couldn't see anything apart from a black car being driven. And then it just comes up in the corner and says, Hamilton.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no!
David Croft went off about that.
The guy who did that just gave the whole of Britain a heart attack for about 20 seconds there. And then when it was like, crap, no, wrong driver, switched it to Bottas. And I was like, no, it is okay, it's Bottas. Like, phew. Then the following lap, we see Hamilton with this bloody puncture. And we're there and we're like, now, you're having a laugh. This is Bottas again and you're just stitching us up. But then you look closer and you're like, black and purple helmet. I'm sure Hamilton... fucking hell. Hamilton's got a punch in it. My heart was, I think, somewhere on the floor during that moment. It just jumped out of my chest. But yeah,
I think you've answered the question there, Rich, about what is the moment of the weekends. It's that. It was that entire last lap and that countdown. And it reminded me, as you say, like your bottom on there, just like, you know, 20 seconds, you know, whatever, doing the countdown. It reminded me of the ending of Ridley Scott's seminal space horror classic Alien, where spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, what are you doing? It's been out since 1979, where Ripley sets off the auto-destruct and then she can't shut the auto-destruct off, and Mother gives a people forget this, people don't remember this, but it's such good cinema. When she's trying to get from the ship to the escape pod, Mother, which is the computer that controls the whole ship, gives a full 30 second countdown. Not I'll give you 30, then 20, then 10, and then every number from 10. Every number from 30, and you hear it all, and it's the longest 30 seconds in cinema because it's so tense. That's what that last lap felt like.
So you say you can't remember these dates or these historical occasions, but you just managed to pull out the release date for the Alien films, or, you know, the year. That's special right there. But yeah, I think that's pretty much our of the weekend's roundup. Moment of the weekend, the Alien film, I think that was the conclusion,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Moment of the weekend was me watching Alien.
Brilliant. So we will do... This really has been a bumper edition podcast. I hope you're all really appreciating how generous we've been with you here. Because we've only got another about half hour to closing time as well at the pub, which is says how long we've been here. But just quickly, we're going to do the NRF1 pit stops. I'm going to leave out the little jingle because time's short. But we're going to do a one stop because that's what most of the races are these days. It's going to be a really quick one, a 2.5 second stop, racing point. Okay, we're moving on. No, I'm joking. Quick touch on them. Racing point, the verdict came through with a protest about their car and the rear brake ducts. They were deducted 14 points and fined a lot of money, but not a lot of money for a Formula One team, it seems. Basically for copying the brake. Teams have protested, Ferrari, McLaren, Renault and Williams, not surprising, and I think Racing Point have also protested basically in the opposite direction to the other teams.
Appealed.
Yeah.
So this is what I don't get, right? So my understanding is the FIA have received a protest from Renault about the brake ducts on the car. The FIA have investigated. They've come to a conclusion. They have they've explained what that outcome is. Now, whether or not they have published the content and methodology of their investigation, I don't know. But they have certainly Racing Point should be able to see it in the interest of fairness. And then the sanction has been made public. Okay. Now, I don't understand, and it might be that someone goes, well, it's all in the contracts, it's all in the agreements. Okay, might be. But I don't understand why other people on the grid have a right to appeal an outcome that is directed at a specific team. The team that has the outcome against it should be able to appeal. Okay, I get that completely. If you have a sanction, you should be able to appeal that sanction. Okay, and potentially the team who have placed the protest, if they get the outcome and the outcome is, well, there's no further action, there's no sanction, they should have the right to appeal the outcome. Okay, now I don't know why the onlookers have the right to appeal. I work in an employment rights environment, okay? I work in human resources. If I was to investigate Kyle in the workplace for whatever you've done, I don't know. But if I was to say to you, okay, Kyle, I'm gonna give you a first written warning for what you've done. Let's say that what you'd done is you'd punched another employee, okay? Now, why I'm not dismissing you, I don't know. Maybe it's because I... But the point is, you could appeal the written warning to say this was unfair or there was a failure of process. But the individual to whom you've applied the violence would actually, the only route that they would have would be to lodge a grievance against the company. So I don't know if I'm confusing the language, but what I understand is that these other teams have launched an appeal against the outcome of the FIA is, actually, have they more accurately launched a grievance to say, we feel that you've handled this investigation improperly, we feel that the sanction is incorrect? Because it infuriates me, because to my knowledge, were Williams, Ferrari, whoever, were they lodging protests as well? Were they putting protests in alongside Renault?
No.
No. So if you don't protest, you don't get to appeal the outcome. If you don't vote in an election, you forfeit your right to bitch about who wins. That's the rule. That's democracy. So if you haven't taken the time to employ someone to make a protest after every single race, you don't get to have a platform about the outcome. And you certainly don't get to complain that the outcome wasn't harsh enough.
And that wraps up the pit stop, I think, pretty well.
Sorry. It was more than 2.5 seconds, Richard.
Quick question, though. Around the table, are you sort of team in the corner of Racing Point or Renault?
I have an answer for that. I believe Formula One should be doing everything it can to make racing competitive. So if Racing Point have breached the regulations, they're in the wrong. And I believe that they should be sanctioned, 100%. But I also believe an argument could be made that the sanctions are confusing, there is a lack of clarity, and that they are too restrictive to allow competitive racing. So what I would like the FIA to do, if they do receive these appeals or grievances or whatever we're calling them from these other teams, is say, and I'd admire them for taking a strong stance if they did it, would be to say something along the lines of, okay, other teams, you want us to give them a harsher punishment, we will. But what that means we're going to do is we're going to open it up so that actually any team with enough money can buy a part from any team that's willing to sell it, or they can reverse engineer it if they can get their hands on it. And we're going to open it up and make it a lot easier for teams to get these parts that are going to significantly affect the performance of the cars. Now, I bet you at that point, teams like your Ferrari will step away and say, actually, we like having teams like Alfa Romeo and Haas on our payroll, but we don't want them to get too big for their boots, and we don't want them to have the right to take anything that they can. So I think the outcome here is, we'll keep the sanction as it is, but we'll keep the restrictions around what can and can't be used tight. But I am in the corner of the rules should be followed.
Yeah.
And if you've broken the rules and you knew those were the rules, then fine. Racing Point's argument, I believe, is we didn't think we were doing anything wrong because this is the process we followed. And actually, if you're now telling us it's wrong, well, actually, it's because the guidelines that you've laid out are not very clear. So everyone takes a little bit of responsibility, but ultimately, if you've broken the rules, you've broken the rules.
Yeah. I think that's, from what I get, this whole from not listed to listed parts, it's the first time it's happened. It's created a grey area, isn't it? Of, well, they had the part last year, but it wasn't the car last year, so they can't use it this year. I think FIA have kind of tried to make, kind of realise there is a big grey area. They try to make both sides kind of happy. They're like, there's a fine, you lost some points, but you can keep it for the rest of the year. And then the other team was like, well, yeah, we have fined them, it's against the rules, blah, blah. But I think they've tried to make everybody happy. And often the case, nobody's happy.
But I'd love to be able to ask an engineer this, but how, if the FIA did turn around and say, okay, fine, you can't use that brake duct for the rest of the year, how easy is it for them to go and get the brake duct from last year and just bang it on? Or would they have to fabricate an entirely new part? And would that mean that they would have to research that part and design that part from scratch? Because I can absolutely understand that if that's what the FIA is looking at, you're looking at one of your significant competitive teams run by someone who is pumping a load of money into your sport. Let's not forget that you're now going to hamstring them for the rest of the year. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if Mr. Stroll suddenly went, actually, I'm out. That was me raising two middle fingers, listeners. But like, actually, I'm out. Or I'm not going to play ball with you going forward. I'm going to make things really difficult for you going forward. I'm going to be obstructive because I can. And you want the 1,880 billion that's in my pocket, however much money he's got. Yeah. But you want the dollar that's in my pocket. Because the FIA, make no mistake about it, want Lawrence Stroll in their sport because he brings money.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is ultimately what it's coming down to.
Definitely. We could discuss that for hours, but we've already been over an hour. But we'll get it's okay, it's okay. This is all good
that
stuff.
That was actually just me apologising to Mike, because I know somewhere he's just gone, geez, guys.
So we'll keep this one quick as well. To be honest, it'll probably be really quick. But next up, Go and do a quick touch on the Spanish Grand Prix, which is, of course, this weekend. We should say we're recording this on a Tuesday night. So only a few more days to go and practice starts. But yeah, Spanish Grand Prix. Now, I'll be honest, if there was any circuit I didn't mind being cancelled, I think it was probably this one. Maybe the French Grand Prix. But this one, it's not my favourite. Nothing ever really seems to happen in Spain, apart from in 2012. But we won't talk about that with present company.
What a day.
But I mean, what about the race prospects? I mean, are you excited? Do you think it's going to be okay?
If the tyre pressures are as high as they were, it may cause issues.
Yeah, it's going to be hot, isn't it?
Yeah.
We know the Mercs have trouble running in the heat. But I also have absolute faith that the Mercs know it's going to be hot. So with Silverstone, it's got its own little weather system. Yeah. It's got its own weather pattern. And it's Britain in the summer. You've got no idea what the weather's going to do. You know that weather's going to be hot in Spain. You know it's going to be toasty. So, you know, they should be able to plan for it a little better, I think. But, yeah.
Definitely. I like to think of this as just the calm before the storm, which is obviously the Belgian Grand Prix and Spa.
Italian.
Italian,
good. And another Italian.
And this brings us on another point. We said this the other day on, I think it was on a live stream podcast about circuits we'd like to see added. And there's now three Italian Grand Prix happening. Why not have three British Grand Prix? Let's get Brands Hatch back on there. Let's take it to Silverstone. Let's take it anywhere, somewhere else. Just let's get another British Grand Prix in there.
That'd be pretty cool.
Or do that Streets of London one that they've talked about for so long.
That'd be awesome. I mean, McLaren even made a Woking circuit. Now, my girlfriend's brother lives in Woking and has a flat with a balcony which would actually look down onto the circuit. So, I mean, if that happened, I'd get free tickets. So,
sword. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the Spanish Grand Prix is just, yeah. We hope, you never know, it might be a decent Grand Prix, but it's probably going to be average as most Grand Prix are.
We'll hope. And I'll tell you what, it's F1, so whatever happens, I'm going
to
love it.
And it's been great that it's been back to back to back as well. Like, I've really enjoyed that. So hopefully we'll have some more of that.
Definitely. And this just proves that they can do more back to back races. And they seem to go around the calendar and they're like, oh, we're going to go over here, which is like on the east of the world. And then, oh, we're going over to here, which is the west. And it's like, you know, they go from Europe to Canada and then back to Europe. On the usual calendar. This year they haven't done that, obviously understandable restrictions, but surely they can just plan the calendar better. They can make the season shorter in length but with just as many races, and I mean give the hard working teams and everyone just a bit more of a break.
I suppose it'll be interesting with the Imola race, as the fact it's only a 2-day weekend.
Yeah,
that'll be interesting to see how that works. That may be something for the future.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, all these circuits which are kind of being added in, like obviously Imola and Mugello as well, are they going to suddenly turn around next year and say, we want to host again? This could end up being a 30-race season.
I think, actually, Portimao as well. World Superbikes were Portimao at the weekend, and that's going to be mega track for
everyone. Look forward to seeing that. Yeah. But Spanish up next. Let's go one word answer. Most important weekend for?
Ferrari.
Albon.
Both good shouts, and I think everyone understands why.
Yeah.
Next up, predictions. Anyone want to make any predictions? If not, we can easily tweet them out and
then go. It will not be a Merc 1-2. That's what I'm going to say.
Shout.
I'm going to say it won't be a Merc 1-2. Someone's either going to split them or you're only going to have one Merc on the podium.
Danny Rick, top four finish.
Nice.
I like that one as well. I like that one
strong
as well. And
what about you?
I'll throw one out there. Fernando Alonso will be in the Renault garage.
Oh, I like that.
For the race weekend.
He'd be a good backup driver, reserve driver, wouldn't he?
He would. I suppose McLaren probably would have still had some sort of link to him. Or is that being cut now? He's signed for Renault for next year. I don't know. Formula One politics, who knows? But we love it. Anyway, we will return with E266, which will be our Spanish Grand Prix review. So do keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, thanks to Kyle and Ped for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to the Rush Cutters for hosting us, which is a bit quieter now. It seems people are starting to go, but it's great to be back here. It feels kind of strange as well, but it's brilliant. So thank you again, for hosting us. And goodbye from these guys, and goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
Cheerio.
Goodbye. And this has been the NRF1 podcast, and we'll see you after Spain.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.